Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Real spoilers powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent Breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 507, It, Chapter 2.
Ta-da.
Ta-da. So before we dig in, let's go around the table. Everyone can introduce themselves before I forget.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. And joining us today via Skype-a-phone, our special guest, Professor.
Oh,
Ryan Terry from RL Terry Real View.
Oh no.
Real with two E's.com. Hey, Ryan, how's it going?
Hey guys, I'm so excited to be here. Thanks so much for reaching out. And even though I'm very busy with the HHN and Disney on Ice and my birthday this weekend, I was incredibly just delighted that I was able to set aside some time to sit down with you guys and talk about It Chapter 2. Longtime listener, and I really enjoy the show. Even though we disagree more times than I would like, but I still really enjoy listening to the show. And it was, extra nice because I got to hang out with Kevin and his family several weeks ago or a couple of months ago, whatever it was, when they were down here in Florida at the parks. And it was great. So now I can have interacted IRL and via Twitter, and now sitting down on your show.
Awesome. Yeah. Typically, people don't come on as guests after they've met him.
Yeah, so usually we try to avoid that at all costs.
Yeah, that normally kind of ruins the whole deal. So we appreciate that.
It was fun. Well, it is always nice to put a face to a name. You talk to so many people online, and it's like you haven't really interacted with them in real life. So I can attest, Ryan is as nice in person as he is on the Twitterverse.
Well, before we get into all that, just some quick shameless plugs. Don't forget, we're available on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can go there, rate, review, subscribe. You can also check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/realspoilers. While you're there, join the League of Show Sharers, which is the name of our group, but also a way to share the show, and then we will knight you. Or Ooh. Do they have female knights?
Brianna Tarth was a knight.
We will
Brianna Tarth.
We will.
He stopped watching.
Is that Game of Thrones? Yeah, I gave up. That was boring. That was. I quit at the right time.
I think I just died a little.
I had the same problem with Game of Thrones that I had with like trying to read the Lord of the Rings book. Like there was too much. It was too much information. And I'm like, I feel like I should be taking notes on this. And then I'm like, if I'm gonna put this much effort into learning, I'm just going to learn real stuff.
I'm going to go to school.
I'm just going to like read a history book or something. This is too much.
Not
to
made
take
up
in.
History.
I mean,
yes.
That wasn't real history this whole time. I'm thinking that I'm reading a legit history, and now I feel like my entire world has imploded.
That's what I do.
I'm
a ruiner of things. So also don't forget our Patreon account, patreon.com/realspoilers, $5 a month. Gets you bonus content like the Quentin Tarantino retrospective episode that you guys just did.
That was a long one.
And the joy of knowing that you gave us $5 this month. So anyway, there's all that. Let's dig in to It Chapter 2. It's always fun to start your podcast off with a hate crime.
So this feels to me like it was 5 pounds of shit put into a 2-pound bag. Hmm. Like, I can't. It's
like the movie or the scene?
The movie.
Okay.
It's very long.
Very long.
And I'm struggling to find what to cut.
I think,
you know what I mean? Like, it's all,
here's what I think their problem is with this movie overall. And overall, I enjoyed the movie.
Yeah.
But it's definitely flawed.
Yes.
Somewhere, I hope they do a completely different edit of this whole thing.
Of the third, of the second part?
Of no, the whole thing. Because if the book, and it's been 25 or 30 years since I read it, but as I remember, the book built a lot of its tension by toggling back and forth between the two stories.
Sure.
Like, and the original TV film does.
Right. And so it's like the adults would reference things that happened when they were kid, but you hadn't gotten that part yet. And you're just like, what does that mean? What's going to happen? How does this play out? Where's the other guy? Like, you're just kind of wondering these things. And this movie, I think, especially the second one, would benefit from doing that. And I think they were trying to recreate that because
they were.
I think the kids were so popular in the first one that they wrote extra things to put them back in.
So they ADR'd Eddie's voice, right? That they changed that kid's voice.
Oh, I mean, they changed his face.
Really?
They used de-aging technology on him because he had grown so much.
Eddie or Richie?
Wait, which is the kid from Stranger Things?
That's Richie.
Oh, then never
mind. That's Richie.
But yeah. I think, so Eddie.
I think Eddie did too. You could tell the CG on a couple of their faces.
Yeah.
Ben's eyes were weird in a few scenes. The young one. It's all the young kids.
Right.
And so you could
My eyes were weird too, the longer that I watched this larger, less terrifying chapter. So I just couldn't believe everything that was unfolding before my eyes. And I'm encouraged. I thought this was going to be the one time that I don't like a horror film was going to be the one time that you guys did, because normally it's the other way around. And so I'm actually kind of I'm a little relieved that I think we're all kind of riding around the same place on this. My expectations were set very high, and I don't think it was out of naivete, because the first one was so incredibly well done. So I set my bar high. I'm like, at least reach that bar. I don't need you to surpass it. Just, you know, as long as you meet it, I'm gonna be happy. So chapter two had some major clown shoes to fill, and it just couldn't do it. It's stuffing its shoes, just like Bev was probably stuffing her bra when she was a kid. So we've got, individually, there are a lot of really good components that in and of themselves work really well. But the execution was just really sloppy, and it's like breaking the cardinal rule of don't rely upon your flashback to tell your main story was broken over and over and over and over. And it just feels very, it felt very empty. There's just little connection with this one. And I think the point of a supercut with, even if it's still 5 hours long collectively, whatever, but just cutting between the present day and the past, I think could help it a lot. And it just feels, there's just so much that's just not really connected here. So I think that's a really good point you guys made.
Let me ask you guys this.
Just to be clear, it wasn't you guys, it was me.
Tom wants to take full credit. So the thing that I found interesting about this one, and I think enjoyed it more than all of you, I don't think it's perfect either, but I mean, I maybe enjoyed it a little bit more. But I didn't think it was that scary. I correct me if I'm mistaken, and I haven't watched the first one since theaters, but I did really enjoy it. But I thought the first one was pretty scary.
Yes. I don't remember the first one being that scary either, to be perfectly honest.
I
felt like this had more scares in it.
I feel like
different scares. Like, all the scares in this were like jump scares.
Right.
But I thought the first one, especially with the danger surrounding the kids, was really terrifying and creepy.
I will agree that I think that the first one did a much better job of creating the ambiance of daring.
The atmosphere of dread.
Yeah, of daring, of something being seriously wrong.
I thought that scene in the library in the first one?
Yeah.
That was scarier than anything.
The scene with Mrs. Kirsch.
And the only thing I see wrong with Derry in present day is it is a town full of bigots. That's about all I got out of Derry is like, this is a place where you're going to go log on to Grindr and you're going to be the only person on there, maybe two other people.
Yeah, but those two other people are going to beat the bejesus out of you.
Right, those two other people are looking to beat up the other guys on there.
I think the scene with Mrs. Kirsch
right,
was on the level of the library scene,
which they shouldn't have put that in the trailers. If that was gonna, that was the one, the one most scary part of the entire film, and I caught that just from before the movie.
That whole scene, and the only thing they do cut out what Mrs. Kirsch looks like,
but they still put that whole lead up the whole to thing. It because I remember sitting in the theater, you know, and you can't avoid it sometimes, and I'm like, okay, that looks like it could be pretty creepy, and then you see the whole thing, right. Like that was the one that they should have left. So if Bev would have been just going to visit her and you didn't know what was up, and then it starts unpacking, I think it would have been a lot scarier.
And you know, old people are creepy anyway.
Yeah, so you don't need to see
whatever.
My pick for creepiest scene, if we're gonna, or highlighting the creepy scenes that, you know, we did like right now, that I think the creepiest scene could have been the afternoon tea scene, the morning tea scene there in the Kirsch house. But I feel that the scene under the bleachers with Pennywise, the little girl, is the creepiest scene, and it was so nuanced. I feel that, you know, there was these small things that Skarsgård did with Pennywise in that moment that made it feel incredibly uneasy and creepy, and it was those 2 to 3 minutes that I feel the experience I had in those 2 to 3 minutes is the experience that I really wish I had through the majority of the movie. Because it felt very sinister, and everything else was almost on the verge of camp, and it's the worst kind of camp. It's the unintentional camp.
Right.
Well, in chapter one, Pennywise is your main focus.
Right. You get more Pennywise,
when he shows up in this one, there is a level of dread, like the scene under the bleachers, or when when Richie sees him with Paul Bunyan, or so like. He's there, but he's not there. And it's a shame because Skarsgård, I think, does a phenomenal job. He's given almost a thankless task where he has to follow Tim Curry.
All right, he's Heath Ledger to Tim Curry's Nicholson.
It's exactly right. Yeah. That's exactly right.
Oh, and, I like that analogy. That's really good.
And the thing is that I thought that Skarsgård was very good, very creepy in the first one. But I think the other thing that I have a problem with this one having even less of him and being less scary, is I didn't even think in the first one that his Pennywise was as creepy as Tim Curry's.
That scene with Georgie, to me, is creepier. His that scene with Georgie with Skarsgård is creepier than the Tim Curry version.
That might be a little better, but I just think the design overall, like, I think the original Pennywise, and I know that I grew up with that one, but I still, comparing them side by side, I think the Tim Curry it, just personally, is a more disturbing, creepy Pennywise.
Because it looks real.
It just, he just looks extremely terrifying.
Well, he looks like a human.
Yeah.
Whereas Skarsgård version has like the bigger head.
The mega mind.
Yeah, exactly.
And a lot of it's CG. I mean, the distortion on his face, while it is creepy imagery, it's still CG. And I think every time you add CG, which this movie's very CG heavy, like the design of the monsters and creatures is a good design. There's a lot of really creepy imagery, but it's a big CG monster running around.
That is where I lost it.
There's no physicality there.
Yeah, so I also...
They're way too big, and that's where it really falls into the camp territory, because we've got these they look fake, these giant monsters that look fake. Why are these so big? The creepiest monsters are the little ones that we see, like at the dinner scene. Those are far creepier than the giant monstrosities that are about to smash our head together with their saggy boobs. And so it's laughable. It's like, I shouldn't be. I mean, I like horror movies that I can laugh along with, because that's one of the charms of a lot of slasher movies, because there are some, you know, there's humorous parts in it. But it's like, this wasn't supposed to be funny. That's the problem. When you're laughing at something that you know isn't supposed to be funny, but it is, because it's just so bizarre. It's like, why are we doing this? And where the hell did Paul Bunyan come from? I mean, may not be up on my Americana tall tales, but I don't think Paul Bunyan is in Maine. Maybe I'm wrong. Paul Bunyan
is more like upper north,
like Minnesota.
Yeah, like that. Paul Bunyan is in the book, and there were two scenes that the director of the movie asked. He's like, is there anything that we don't have in the script that you're like, this needs to be in.
One, I want to sell a bicycle, and two, Paul Bunyan.
But Paul Bunyan was one of those two scenes.
That Stephen King said, I want that.
Stephen King was like, Paul Bunyan needs to be in this movie.
Interesting.
And so, if for whatever reason, he prioritized this scene, and I'm blanking on what the second one was,
okay.
but Paul Bunyan was like practically an edict from Stephen King to include in this movie.
Who's the only character in this entire movie with a Maine accent? Like, the Stephen King character we see is the only one that is rocking a Maine accent. I was like, okay, he sounds like Judd.
Yeah,
like,
that's okay. Yeah, John Lithgow didn't. You know, he wasn't rocking his Maine accent back when we were in a Pet Cemetery.
He would if you go back and rewatch. I just rewatched that like a week ago. It drops in and out, so he's got it in some scenes. He doesn't have it in other scenes. So like that was a problem with it. Anyway, so It Chapter Two starts off. We're 27 years past the first movie. And we've got a gay couple, and they're enjoying themselves at the county fair, or the dairy fair, I guess. And they are attacked by who I thought was going to be, I thought he was going to be somehow related to the kid from the hospital.
Yeah, I thought so, too.
I thought he was going to be like his son or something.
Or
like,
that
I was
like
trying to...
somehow they had never aged, and that they're just kind of this constant bully threat in this town.
Yeah, well, I mean, we do know that he has,
there should have been a connection, because I was talking with my friends last night when we were waiting for one of the houses who had read the books. And I haven't read the book, and I learned from them that this scene is in the book, because I questioned them, like, why was this just seems like so out of left field. This is not connected to anything. It feels like a lazy plot.
I feel like, okay, so here
simply
I
simply there to put Mikey where he's supposed to be to see it. And we
I
never
feel like
revisit
it is,
any of this.
It is in the book because they talk about Richie being gay. Like,
which
Richie,
we never really revisit that either. We plant
they
all these things.
They definitely
really
allude to it.
They allude to it, but they never really pay it off.
At the end with the plus E. Because he carves in. It was Richie plus, and you never saw it, but it was Eddie.
Oh, okay.
He was in love with Eddie.
Gotcha.
So that was the payoff.
To me, where I think you get the Paul Bunyan scene.
I read it that way.
Paul Bunyan scene.
I didn't.
Because they were alluding to it, and then the plus, you're waiting the whole time, and it was like plus A. Yeah.
Well,
that
wouldn't
be just a friendship thing in the heart. Right. You know? Like,
so was Eddie gay, too?
No.
No,
he obviously was married, but I guess it doesn't mean anything.
Well, that doesn't mean, yeah.
No, but I think Richie just, and that's probably leading to, like, it wasn't a... reciprocated, you know what I mean? It was just,
sure.
Yeah.
It was unrequited.
Yes, exactly.
But I think, like, the scene with Paul Bunyan where Pennywise is like, I know your secret.
Right.
I'm going to tell everybody your secret.
Right.
Like, we should tell everybody your secret.
Yeah.
And he says earlier, he's like, I love that scene where he's like, I don't write my own material. And Eddie's like, I knew it. Like, those two definitely have, like, a relationship that is contentious, but also, like, we're best friends.
Well, they pick on each other more
than
anyone else.
They are the two, and they are the comic relief of this movie. Like, them together.
Yes.
When Eddie gets stabbed in the face, and like he stabs I can't think of that bully's name,
Bowers
in the chest, he's like, you should really cut that mullet. What is this, the 1980s?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, as he's got a knife, like, you know, a knife wound.
Yeah.
Or he's like, is it that bad?
And I didn't like Eddie as an adult at all.
His direction was really poor. I mean, I'll give this movie its casting. It's a masterclass of casting. I mean, the cast that they picked, I mean, the look, you know, with a little help from CG, I mean, looks like the kids, and I think the people that were selected were great, but unfortunately, only McAvoy and Chastain, and I guess Hader to an extent, had good direction. Everybody else had like the direction. It was just lacking in direction. It's like, I mean, you have a great cast here. Why do we only have three, not even standout, but three good performances?
I thought Hader just kind of phones it in. I thought Hader was the MVP.
Yeah, I think Hader saves this movie a lot.
I think this will be the performance. Hader, to me, is the new Robin Williams. I think Hader has the ability to do the ridiculous comedy.
Right.
But also has, like, did you ever see, what was the one he did with Kristen Wiig?
The Skeleton Twins?
Yeah, that's a next level performance. Like, he's insanely good in that movie. So
a one-hour
like,
photo. That's one of my favorite Williams performances, and it was probably the first time that I saw him do something completely unlike anything else I had ever seen before.
Yeah.
And to that point, I can see the similarities in the Hader and Williams in this. So I'll concede.
Thank you.
I'll give him.
He'll allow it.
But I still feel that they're the McAvoy, Chastain, and Hader are the only three who really give us anything.
I pretty much liked them all. Yeah. I thought Mike's performance was a little weak, but I really liked Ben.
But in defense of Mike, his only job in the movie was exposition.
Right, yeah, totally. Well, yeah, That was the only...
Yeah. He's gotten... There's
nothing else.
There's no drama or story arc with Mike.
Right. But in the first one, it's like he's dealing with so much, like guilt and with his trauma and everything from the fire.
And I think in the book, it's Ben who sticks around.
It is Ben
the
who
librarian.
Sticks around. Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know why they changed that.
I think to give the black guy something to do.
Well, that makes sense.
I don't mean that in a dismissive way. I think they were like, we've got one black character in this movie, and he doesn't do a thing otherwise.
Because in the movie, he sticks around too, right? Like, they must have made that change in the TV miniseries.
I don't remember.
Because Ben, I'm pretty sure, is a real estate developer guy in the movie. Ryan, am I correct in thinking that?
Real estate developer or architect
I
think it may have been an architect, but
he's out of Derry in the TV miniseries too, so that's interesting if that was a change. So they'd made that a long time ago and they stuck with it.
Maybe it's been so long since I've seen the made for TV. The only thing I remember about the made for TV movie is that part one was really good, part two was really dumb.
Kind of like here, and I won't say part part two is dumb. I think part two, I really enjoyed part two, but I think part one is a better movie.
Yeah.
Well, part one is where we have so much more character development, and then we have so much less character development here in chapter two. And I think that's one of my biggest criticisms is the inability to truly connect with and empathize with the characters. Ultimately, I didn't care who died. And it's like, that should not be the case. I should really care about these characters and what happens to them. And I attribute that to having because we're not cutting in between, like in the TV movie, like every other scene is adults and kids. You know, we've actually, separated the two. And we have, this is where all of our adult actors are. I haven't spent enough time with those actors. I'm aware that it's the same character, but I haven't spent enough time visually with these actors playing those characters to truly care about what happens to them. And it's not helped that like a good third of the movie is flashbacks. And so that even cuts away more from the screen time that I need to spend as the audience member with these actors playing these characters to empathize with them with the end result being where I truly care about them, because I just didn't care. I did not care about these characters. I cared about the characters in the first movie. I didn't really care about these characters in this one, because I'm tossed back and forth between all these flashbacks and dream sequences, and now we're in present day, but then let's go back to a flashback. It is as if this movie is like not chronologically in terms of our diegesis, but in terms of when the movies were released, it's as if this movie is released like 10 years, separated from the original one. And we have to be reminded of all of this. It's like, it was just 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I think
be reminded of all of this from just 2 years ago.
I think they tried to give you those character developments when they would do the one shots while Mike is calling everybody. So that's the deal, is there's an attack. Pennywise shows up, attacks this. After this gay couple is assaulted and, beaten to literally a bloody pulp.
And, those guys were ready to straight-up murder this guy. He knocked him unconscious.
They knocked him unconscious and threw him in the
water.
So I know Pennywise finishes the job, but for all practical intents and purposes, that guy was going
to
die.
It's not realistic he would have woken up and swam to shore.
No,
like,
right.
That's the thing, is it's like they dumped him in the water to die. I just can't believe that the bullies in this town are just willing to straight up murder people.
Yeah, that's that they were not.
I mean, what else are you going to do in Derry? Do you see any industry? I think this is where you go. It's just like drug, sex, and murdering people. I mean, that's about all you got going on in Derry, aside from the occasional visit from a clown every 27 years.
So do we know why Pennywise? I thought Pennywise kills kids generally.
That was my question, is why he attacked somebody who's in their mid-20s.
I didn't get kids. That either.
Yeah.
Because
they're not the adults. Because I'm like, are these, is it, who is this? It's like, I don't remember these people. And then And they're like, well, they're like in their 20s. And yeah. So why is Pennywise preying on, you know, these two guys or this guy in his 20s and like that?
I mean, maybe like, the only thing I can think is like
there's a lot of inconsistencies.
The Pennywise creature feeds on fear. So maybe he's just trying to kind of like Freddy Krueger in Freddy versus Jason, where he's trying to get some of that power back after.
And it's been 27 years.
But yeah. Now you're writing their script for them.
I am. Totally. Yeah. I agree.
Also, he's like Rita coming out of her capsule on the moon and the pilot of Power Rangers.
Yes, exactly.
It's
like
been 10,000 years. Whatever she says.
So yeah, so Mike sees everything go down and he realizes we have to get everybody back together. So I feel like this is your opportunity to see where these characters have gone. Obviously, Bill is Stephen King. If they would,
they all have successful careers. Don't we all wish we had every single one of the careers?
Yeah, no kidding.
That they had in the movie. Like, what are the odds that this one group of friends would all grow up to have phenomenal careers? Like nobody. Maybe it's because they were losers as a kid and now they're no longer losers. But
I think
that is not realistic. Not every single one of your friends grows up to make six figures a year doing like what they love to do.
Well, isn't Eddie just like a? He's
risk adjuster.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, he's like a risk adjustment guy.
Yeah.
But it's like, I think that's
a sweet-ass Escalade.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of that, I don't know if you'd say wish fulfillment, but it's like, yeah, don't worry, kids. You know, even if you're a loser growing up and not popular, you'll grow up and be successful, and the losers will be just the bullies and the punks that have no jobs. Like, I think it's a little...
You're putting the loony bin.
On the nose, yeah. But, you know...
But yeah, I think... So, like, I do like the joke where... Bill is trying to finish
a script. He can't finish a book,
but his endings suck.
Yeah. I think that was kind of...
I think that was a direct shot at Stephen King. And at this book.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we didn't have the blood orgy. I'm like, I was sitting there waiting for the blood orgy, there's no blood orgy in this movie.
Well, at least we didn't
get a turtle and a spider fighting.
We did get a spider,
but he didn't fight a turtle.
They took the turtle out. That was not necessary.
So he's the Stephen King version. And if they would have said that line once,
yeah,
I was fine with it. But they keep hammering that poor dude throughout the movie about his endings. And I was like, all right, not all of his endings suck.
Right.
Like, there are some good,
well,
like...
And the writer also said it's not supposed to be Stephen King.
Okay.
So, I mean, obviously he's involved in the movie. They're not directly trying to make fun of him, but that's how most people are going to read it. But they...
Oh, that's how I read it.
That's exactly what they're...
Like, well, how self-reflexive, because... The ending of this movie was anticlimactic and sucked, so it's better than the book. Within the movie.
Yeah. It's still better than the book.
And we've talked about The Shining, where it's almost a completely different movie altogether. Yeah. So they call everybody, and everybody kind of they don't recognize the number, so what happens is as you get away from Derry, you start to lose your memory of Derry, which I think is a thing that they do in that show, for the Hulu show.
The Castle Rock?
I feel like when the main character leaves Ben, leaves Derry, like he doesn't remember everything. And then when he comes back, his memories kind of start to come back. So they all kind of have forgotten about each other, even though they went through this horrific experience.
And I think that would play so much better in a different edit where... He's reaching out like, you got to come back. You got to come back.
Like,
and you're like,
what?
But as a viewer, you'd be like, come back for what?
Right.
Like, what happened?
Yeah.
And I just feel like that's
how you open your movie. Maybe.
Right. Yeah. And like the tension of that scene is completely gone because we know
what happened.
So when he sits there and makes phone call after phone call after phone call, and you're like, dude, we get it.
Right.
And it becomes just exposition for where they are now instead of establishing who these characters are and then going back and seeing how they began.
Right.
It's a great point.
That's a good idea. That's a very good idea.
I think that the flashbacks, if we wanted to have lots of flashbacks, because clearly they did because we got a ton of them. So if we wanted to have a lot of flashbacks, my go-to example, even in my screenwriting class, when I talk about at this stage, you guys, you know, you're sophomores in college, just do yourselves a favor and stay away from flashbacks until you know how to use them.
Right.
Because it becomes such a trap.
It's like narration.
Exactly. When I give them, here is a great, in my opinion, one of the greatest examples of use of flashbacks in a way that is focused, moves the plot forward, makes the foreground story just as interesting as the background story is the Americana classic Fried Green Tomatoes, Oscar-winning Fried Green Tomatoes. Because I love how we spend time in the past with Mary Stuart Masterson and I forget the other actors, and of course in the present, Jessica Tandy and Kathy Bates. And so we're spending Ruth and Iggy in the past and Evelyn Couch and Ninny in the present. The way the writer goes back and forth there works really well because this story that happened in the past is providing a framework for this story in the present in a way that both the characters are being developed simultaneously and they echo one another. But right. There's still this constant focus and this constant trajectory to the climax of the movie. And that's what I feel was not here. I don't feel that our flashbacks and our present story were working together towards the same goal. It almost feels like they're working towards two different goals. And there's a divide there. And I think, you know, that is a, so that's my example of flashbacks that I think, you know, do work very well is the ones from Fried Green Tomatoes.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I feel like the book, it achieves that. And I think as much as the ending of the book is wonky,
yeah,
I think part of the reason people love it so much is because 95% of
it
is so good.
Right.
And does exactly what Ryan is talking about. And in my head, the edit of this movie, like you still get the flashbacks, but I think that, the lion's share of those flashbacks would be the first movie.
Part one.
It wouldn't be what we're seeing in the second movie.
Sure.
And I think that would make it better. And I think ultimately what the way to tell if a flashback is good is when you can't tell if it's a flashback or the other stuff is a flash forward.
That's a good point. That's a good point. And we do get that.
Good point.
We do get that a little bit.
Yeah.
Where they're telling you about like what happened after the first time they go in the sewers.
Right.
Like we have to go back and look at those day or two where they are on their own, kind of without the losers.
And I just thought that was such a stupid decision. I think part of the reason why you can't connect with the adults is that they get back together and instantly split up. And then you're like, well, how do we defeat it? We defeat it together. Oh, but there was that one time where we weren't together for a little bit. It was so stupid to the whole first movie about them being together. And they're like, let's give them a reason to split up. Oh, we can do it as adults because we did it as kids. What? That's a dumb reason. Like, yeah. No, we're facing this evil. Right. Let's stick together. There's no reason to split up. So we get so very little time with the group that you don't feel the connection you did when they were kids and always together.
Right. So, yeah. So they introduce all of our characters. Bill's working on a movie. Which I like the interaction with him and the director. I thought that was funny.
Well, you get another. Everybody talks about the Stephen King cameo. Nobody's talking about this cameo.
Who is that?
That's Peter Bogdanovich.
I didn't know who that was.
Yeah,
either.
That's the director of Paper Moon. And,
that's funny.
Yeah, and what, The Last Picture Show?
Yeah. I figured he was somebody.
Oh, cool.
But yeah, it's,
it was such a wink at the camera cameo that it had to be somebody.
Yeah. For sure.
And he was also in The Sopranos.
Oh, really?
He was Melfi's psychiatrist.
Oh.
I believe.
Interesting.
But yeah.
Did you know that I actually just saw this? The director that DiCaprio talks to in Once Upon a Time in America? You know when that director comes
in?
Yeah, Hollywood.
Yeah.
That's,
well, Hollywood's in America,
yeah,
so it
duh.
Counts.
That's the original TV Spider-Man.
Oh, that's funny.
It's the actor that played Spider-Man in those bad TV movies.
Oh, that's funny.
Anyway,
no way.
Yeah, it that's is. Cool. Yeah, yeah. So we see Richie, who is Bill Hader, who is
a stand-up comic.
Who is doubled down on the raunch. We see Ben, who is a brilliant architect person. We see Bev, but I don't really know.
She married a rich guy.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, that house is super.
She's a kept.
She's
a kept woman.
Yes,
yeah.
That was so uncomfortable. I will say,
I was fine with the like. I agree. Like she would marry.
Ugh.
Somebody like her dad.
Yeah,
I mean, that's
a common thing.
Yeah,
I will tell you though. See those scenes going back to what we said earlier. The gay couple being beat up was super uncomfortable, and the Bev scene super uncomfortable,
uh-huh.
And even the is it Bowers, the bully in the
Bowers, yeah.
in the hospital? I mean, that small scene with under the bed and a zombie, smaller scare.
Oh, yeah.
That was uncomfortable.
Hirschfelder.
All the small little stuff.
You know, there's also a thread that's cut from the movie that's in the book that I also think maybe puts the hate crime in better context.
Yeah.
Which is...
It's a weird thing to say, but all right.
But the Bowers kid is gay. And like there's a so he has a gay sex scene in the book.
Okay.
Where him and one of the other
Hirschfelder?
One of the other bullies.
Because that would make sense if Hirschfelder shows back up as a zombie.
It could be
this.
It's been 25-30 years and everything. Sure. But they end up like jerking each other off. But then they kind of don't know what to do with that.
Right.
Besides clean up.
But they instantly dismiss it.
But it's, you know.
I'm not gay. You're gay.
Right. Yeah. And, it's like this kind of awkward thing that kind of hangs over their relationship.
If they included that in the movie, it would have brought that into better context and worked better than, well, we're just going to kind of put this in here. One, it's in the book. Two, we want to make sure that our movie is inclusive and diverse and progressive and like all these other buzzwords that have become all too cliche. And it's like, we're just going to put that in there instead of including a scene like that. Cause that 5 minutes or even three, that what could have been a 3 minute scene could have, I think, created a much better framework to where it just, that subplot just didn't feel shoehorned in there,
right.
just like, oh hey, we included it.
It would have made
It feels like what virtue signaling, like noble we are
because we included it in our movie,
right?
But even though it was, I mean, at least you got to give them credit, it was in the book. If they were to just put that in there to try to make a point,
he put it in his book 30 years ago
but that does explain more of why
I just remember in the book Bowers being like super scary. In a lot of ways, he was more scary than Pennywise.
Sure.
You know,
in the first one, I thought he was because Bowers is a real person going around murdering people.
Right.
Like,
do we see him kill his family? Do we ever see that?
I don't think you see it, but you see the aftermath. Like he goes.
Yeah. You do?
Yeah, because he's being beat up and then he has a knife or something. And then in the next scene, they're all bloody or whatever. Like there's.
Okay.
You just.
I'm ready to rewatch that.
You
first
know, I don't
one,
think you
don't
see
remember
him
that.
Do it, but you clearly it's.
Yeah, because I mean, in this one, we get his flashback where. We see him in the first one. He's in that, he gets knocked into the sewer, and I thought he was dead. I was like, well, that's the end of that guy. But we see in this one, he kind of crawls out of the sewer. He comes home and he's talking to himself. He's talking about the Losers Club, and then the police are at his house, and they arrest him for the murder of his entire family. And I was like, what? Where did that come from?
Yeah,
does Pennywise kill them and brainwash Bowers to think
You know, again, it's been a long time since I've read the book, but I remember the book as being like Bowers was douchey.
Already unhinged?
And kind of evil to start with.
Yeah.
And then Pennywise kind of exploits that ramps it up. But he was not a tragic figure who was a good, like in Christine,
the kid is a tragic figure.
The kid's a tragic figure. He's a nice guy who's put upon, and then the car turns him into this crazy douchebag.
Demon.
Yeah.
Basically.
And in the book, I remember that being even more tragic than the film.
I gotcha.
But Bowers, at least to the best of my recollection, was not a tragic figure. He starts off as pretty bad, and then Pennywise takes it to the next level.
Gotcha. So the kids come back, and it's James McAvoy, Bill Hader, Jessica Chastain, and then three other guys.
I couldn't help but think that McAvoy is doing one of his voices from Split.
The stutter is absolutely a voice from Split.
With Split, he has so many different things, and he's is he British?
I think he's Scottish.
Or Scottish. I'm sorry, you're right. He's Scottish.
Well, when you're American, they're the same.
It's all the same. Sorry.
So he's
European.
He's from the UK.
Right. Yeah.
So he's
Scottish.
He's Scottish, but he does these American voices in Split. And so his American voice for this is definitely a choice, like the same choices he makes.
I think the stutter is. Yeah. I think his voice
But I heard his American voice. His deep he deepens a little. Like I directly heard the same way that kind of like his New York voice, but without the accent.
Sure,
you
sure.
know. But anyway, so but he's. I mean, he's really good. I think like to echo what you guys said. McAvoy, Chastain, Hader. I mean, they're all top notch. But even the other actors who I mean, these are people that have been around. They're not like new. You know.
No, the guy we saw. So the guy that plays Eddie. Was in a couple Sinister movies. He's been in some other stuff.
There's some horror people they pulled into these.
Not Phil Dunphy.
Not Phil Dunphy.
That's all I could think
of. I mean,
the whole movie.
I could see where they could have cast him.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ty Burrell.
Yeah.
Yeah, they could have cast him as well.
And I think that I wish they had.
Yeah.
Like, I think that, like, he would have come
well,
off.
The humor.
He would have come off likable. Like, I just did not like Eddie as an adult at all.
To me, he felt like the kid.
I don't know. I guess I was more willing to kind of forgive that whininess in a kid than I was in an adult.
It's not realistic. I mean, it's as a kid, I think we're more willing to accept caricatures or exaggerations because, they're kids and
right. They're still finding their way. Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
And as an adult, even if you have those phobias and those quirks, it is. I mean, yes, there are rare, there are extreme, examples and rarities, but that's not normally how an adult who has obviously a successful career, I'm not willing to buy that he is still this extreme because I don't think he would have got to where he is it was just like, it was too much. It was like, it's a little bit as good because I like that is part of your character. And it shows me flaws because the last thing you want in a movie are flawless characters, and so that's your flaw.
I don't think that he is that character. I think that he becomes that character again when he comes back to Derry.
That's a good point. They start to become who they remember.
Then they should have explained.
Well,
that
they
better.
Did kind of. I feel like while Bill is not in Derry, he doesn't have a stutter,
right?
And then when he comes back to Derry, he has the stutter. So I feel like. That is, and Bev's character doesn't really. She's kind of
have
the same.
A spine, and then she comes back to Derry, and she starts to kind of.
But she didn't have a spine in Derry either.
I mean, not with her dad, but she was still, I think, a stronger character. Yeah. Like standing
up. She was
up
stronger
for
as a kid than she was. She wasn't quite damsel in distress, but she was a hell of a lot stronger as a kid.
Right.
Yeah.
So I feel like Eddie's character. Probably did change, but as he comes back to Derry, because he gets his inhaler and he has all of these different things that were reminiscent of him as a kid.
I think that's a great point. I think it makes sense.
Yeah, but I do agree that maybe they could have done a better job of.
But the inhaler doesn't work. Like the inhaler,
but he doesn't know that it's a placebo.
Yeah,
It's just one of those things that
I feel like
he
in
starts
the book,
to revert.
He found that out though.
He finds it out in this.
Does he? Okay.
Yeah, he finds out when he's a kid.
Right.
He finds out that it doesn't work.
Yeah.
So I feel like he's just reverting back to that character and just going, talking to the creepy.
Yeah, I just
pharmacist.
I guess I just didn't get that to that degree with the other ones. I didn't like the.
I got you.
The performance.
Yeah.
It was just too. Nakedly needy.
I gotcha.
So that was
needed direction. That's what it needed.
So that was
it didn't get it.
That was James Ransone is Eddie. Yeah. Jay Ryan is Ben. Isaiah Mustafa is Mike, and then Stanley is Andy Bean, who we don't see too much.
And it's
as
all, it's tough because anybody that has read this book, we know what's going to happen to Stanley,
right?
So
or have seen the original miniseries, you know why.
In the original one, does he write something on the wall though? In the original miniseries, like, does he write something in blood in the on the wall?
Yeah, red rum.
So everybody
see his picture in black and white with
over the overlook. Yeah,
overlook.
Hey, we did get that homage the Here's Johnny reference in the movie.
Yeah, I think that was
I think that was weird.
I didn't like that.
I didn't either because I'm like, why would. That be in
Don't,
this.
It just I, took me out of it.
It did,
so it is.
Was that
it,
Bev's dad? Who was that said, "Here's Johnny"? I couldn't even tell. It was so fast with the people that he was changing into.
I forget.
But I'm like, why would that character know or have a reference to Jack Torrance? Like,
is a connection. Like, if you go through their books, like in Pet Sematary, they reference Cujo.
Right.
Or in,
I think Mike's character, his parents were somehow related to Dick Halloran from the Shining
Overlook.
And the Overlook. Yeah. And then there's like a murder at a black nightclub that they set on fire that kind of leads to that. And then it also leads into another Stephen King book. Crap.
Well, that's like Rose Matter. Castle Rock, though, that yeah. all of these, you know, that these universes are connected, and that's why I'm willing to accept it, not just as a horror junkie, but just, you know, I know that, you know, the all these universes, like, he was pioneering universes before,
yeah.
you know, before, you know, Iron Man would, you know, hit the screen in 2010. And so we have these stories connected, and that's what I like. Even in the Pet Sematary earlier this year, when there, you see the sign to Derry, it was like Derry 12 miles or
yeah.
whatever.
Yeah.
And so I like how there are those little things, and we don't have huge plot, you know, huge plot connections, but it's little references, and that's what makes it feel more like a real world.
So
because it's these little things that are connected to each other.
So here's what I agree, like, that Stephen King, I mean, he does that in his second book.
Oh, yeah.
In The Dead Zone, yep. he references Carrie.
Yep.
And wasn't
like the girl had the similar powers or something?
Well, Dead Zone, like, he could touch and see your future.
Right.
And, like, they make a reference to, like, there'd been this fire at the high school and all the kids were trapped in. And it was like, back then, that was mind blowing that these books would connect in such a casual manner, right?
Yeah.
But I think the other thing that bothers me about the Here's Johnny thing, because I get what you're saying, Ryan, but, like, is that
he wouldn't have heard Jack Torrance say that. So
well, but he could say. But I think what Ryan's saying, though, is that it's still kind of like in that echoplasm,
sure,
scariness stuff that goes on. But that is that's in the movie, and it's not in the book. And Stephen King doesn't like the movie. Yeah. And no. So I'm just like,
so they put a reference to the movie.
They
he doesn't
put a reference
like
to, and... yeah, to the movie version that he doesn't like. And like, and so it's like, and again, but that's part of why it takes me out is like, right. I'm suddenly doing the algebra, the pop culture algebra.
I am
in my
curious
head.
As to like how, what they're going to do with Dr. Sleep. Like if it's going to be closer
to. It's a sequel to the movie.
It is. But there's a Dr. Sleep book.
And so it looks to me.
No, I know, but they're going to reference the movie.
Okay,
too.
Okay.
I know they're referencing the movie in terms of the scenes we have with the blood elevator and the twins, the theatrical movie. But I question. It's like, are we using that as our visual reference because that's what more people are familiar with and what is artistically better than the made for TV series, which was closer to the book? So it's like, is Dr. Sleep going? Is it like a sequel to the book? And then we could use the TV movie with Rebecca De Mornay as the example, or is this a sequel to the Kubrick loose adaptation of it? And so I'm like, what are we being a sequel of, or, you know, in terms of the narrative? Is it the narrative that we have in the Kubrick movie or the narrative that we had in the TV miniseries, even though we're obviously using visually references to the Kubrick movie? And I don't know. It's like, are we... I'm excited to see it regardless, but I do wonder that.
Are we
a sequel to?
I'm reading the book at the moment. I'm halfway through, and I just read The Shining. So I literally am reading them back to back. And excuse me. And the book, while it features an adult Danny Torrance, and it uses, you know, the backdrop of the Overlook is like this thing that happened to him. It's really not a direct sequel in the traditional sense.
Other people have The Shining, right?
Yeah, it's like he hooks up sexually, Ayo. but he like partners up with this teenage girl who also has The Shining, and then there's a group of people that are out to like kind of like vampires, but not really, that are out to try and kill her
because
gotcha. They need her powers to live. They feed off of that. And like, but it really, like, regardless of how you feel about the movie versus the book, you could make this an adaptation of this book.
Yeah.
And you don't need what occurred in the book versus the movie to be identical.
I got
for this to work on either level. Like you could probably view it either way and be fine is my guess.
Okay.
Because there's like Dick Halloran's only, like, at least so far, he's just like in the opening scene, which takes place almost immediately after The Shining. But then after that, it fast forwards to him as an adult.
It's Mike Flanagan, so game on.
Yeah.
Who's directing that?
Yeah.
So. So this, our kids and adults get back together. They're having like a sit down, and they notice that Stanley's not there. This is where we get, they all start to remember things, and they start to remember Pennywise, and it starts to freak them all out. And Richie's like, I'm leaving. So I don't want to do this. Like, I, you know, like, we can come back in 27 more years and figure this out. And they're like, we'll be 70. And he was like, cool. No, I'm not doing it. So they kind of start to split off.
Then we get, well, you got to mention CG, Chinese food freak out.
Right, which is really gross. Yeah. You know, like, the fortune cookies kind of, they break them apart, and they all kind of have one words on
good
them.
Good design's just very CG. It's just, yeah, anytime it's, you get the CG, it just takes you out of it.
But this is the worst CG of the movie.
Yeah. I got to, okay.
It's bad for a beginning scene of CG, because you're just like, oh, fake creatures.
So they all have cookies, and they all have words, and they can't figure out how they work together, because they're missing one word.
And Bev gives the last
one. It says, I guess Richie couldn't, or I guess Stan couldn't cut it. And then they call Stan immediately. Still, that we find out that Stan has actually committed suicide. As soon as Stan gets the phone call, he's like, no,
I'm
and
out.
Slits his wrists.
Yeah.
I am not going back. We find out that later he has an ulterior motive to killing himself, but it's still in that moment, I'm not going back to Jerry. Like, you're out of your mind. So, they all, you know, they figure out that.
And technically he could cut it.
He did, and he literally did cut it. He cut it twice.
Yes,
that's one thing that I thought the exact same things. I'm like, but he did.
But
so.
I think that's the, you know, it's Pennywise messing with him.
Yeah.
So they go back to the hotel. All of them are like, nope, we're not doing this. Like, he just killed.
Does anybody work at this hotel?
That was another concern. Like, what? They had free reign of the bar and of the whole place. Like, what?
And it's one of those kiosk hotels, just like at a. A lot of fast food restaurants now. You go that's all you have to do there. And
it's
so
all
it
automated.
Keeps the prices low, because no one's going to come to Derry and spend $100 a night for a room there. So you got to keep the prices low, and you keep the prices low by throwing up a kiosk.
Yeah,
so you go in and you pick your room, and there
free
you go.
Full bar,
right?
Yeah. Fully stocked bar. Because I'm just like, they didn't show one employee working at
that
hotel.
You don't see anybody in Derry.
It's crazy. That's, like.
So yeah, so basically Mike is freaking out because he gets this story. He knows the story. So he tricks Bill into seeing, like, drinking this weird root water and goes to this super trippy.
I thought this was kind of cool.
I liked the idea of
like cutting back and forth between Mike doing the ritual with the Native Americans.
Right.
And then Bill having his minor trip.
This is where the movie loses me. Mm-hmm. When you get the origin of Pennywise, I'm out. Like,
I don't want to know.
Well, it's like, if you're going to tell me that he's an alien, I've checked out. But if you keep him as like this Native American, like this Wendigo, basically, I can deal with that. Like,
well, thanks, Stephen King. I mean, that's,
no, I agree. Like, you know, that's
he's light. He's a bunch of balls of light.
That's
right?
It. I mean, it's just like, I don't like when we get to the end and I'm just like, I was checked out. At that point, like, not that it was too long, but like when you get the whole spider fight, I was like,
Pennywise,
I don't
this
care.
Is the root of the problem. We've already touched on it. Pennywise is super creepy as a killer clown.
Right. Yeah.
That's super creepy because clowns exist. Clowns have killed people. Like, clowns are real. That's why Bowers is creepy. You could have a kid be crazy and murder people. All the realistic stuff that could actually happen is scary because it's real. When you get into the supernatural monsters, especially CG and unrealistic, it just starts to be like, well, that's just a big fake thing. It's not like, oh, my God.
Also didn't like the creature design. I felt a lot of it looked like early Tim Burton.
I could see that.
Like, with those faces that look like the creature from Beetlejuice with the long, pointy face.
Sure.
Or, like, you see similar creatures in, I guess, Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
The stop motion stuff?
Yeah, like, I just...
Well, I love those designs.
I love it in that. I love it in those movies. Yeah. Like, but in this movie...
It doesn't work.
I was just like, well, that's not...
I thought the creatures looked really good, again, besides from being fake. Like, I liked the, in the bottom of the pharmacy. Like, I thought that creature was just creepy looking.
The leper?
I liked the design of it a lot. It just took me out of it with the CG stuff.
I thought... See, that's the thing, is, like, that whole scene where Eddie kind of stands up and fights back, and then Amelia gets puked on.
Yeah. Right.
And he's like walking back into the hotel. They're like, what's wrong with you? He's like, nothing. I'm
funny.
Fine. I'm fine.
The movie is way funnier than you expect, because that scene got a ton of laughs when the puke is going in his face, the black spew, whatever.
Yeah, I didn't like that.
I get it.
Like, I just thought it was too much.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, they were playing up so much for laughs that I think that also takes you out of the horror element a little bit, the scariness of it, because there's a difference. When you get Cabin in the Woods, you know,
Cabin
there's
in the
a
Woods
different
are ready
tone.
Or not. Like, there's a
right.
different tone.
Where,
and also, like, Cabin in the Woods, even though it uses horror tropes, it's there's nothing scary in that movie.
No,
it's very tongue in cheek.
Yeah,
it's and I think that's it works when it's tongue in cheek, yes. But it doesn't work when you're making a serious horror film, but yet you're gonna include all these tongue in cheek moments. What you can't really have it is if you're gonna go tongue in cheek. You go tongue in cheek. So it's like if you want to have
a tongue
in cheek movie of people hunting each other, you go with the outstanding Ready or Not. If you go with like serious movie where this is happening, well then you go with the movie that you know that it may not ever see the light of day. And so it's the intent of the writer and the director, and you don't want to waffle back and forth between you then, because then you have tonal inconsistencies and you don't know how to watch it as an audience, and then it comes off as a movie with identity crisis.
I agree, because that's the thing with this movie, they want to be taken seriously, they want to deal with very serious subjects.
I also didn't like the music choice in the puke scene with the Angel of the Morning by Kim Carnes.
That was weird.
And I'm just like,
the score, if you want to call it that, soundtrack, whatever, it does not work. There's not one moment that I remember in the movie in which either the score, which I've already forgotten, so that's how memorable it is, and then the soundtrack, it's not a character. And I think soundtrack in a horror film, whether it's soundtrack or score, it should be a character.
Yeah,
and I don't
absolutely.
Think your score and soundtrack has to be a character in every movie that ever comes out, but I think in particular it's important for a horror film for your score, just like the Halloween, the piano, the jingle, the whatever it is,
right.
the series of notes. I mean, that's a character, just like Jason's,
right.
I'm gonna have to.
It's just
kick,
like
kick,
missing.
Kick, 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 ma ma ma.
Oh, jeez.
So I think we should go, because basically the whole premise is that the thing that Bill sees with Mike is that they have to collect a totem from each artifact that's important to them. So they go around and all the big scares of the movie, or if you want to call them big scares, all the scary quote unquote parts revolve around them trying to retrieve their totems. So I think we should just go to each of the scary parts.
So Bill has to go back and get Georgie's ship that he made. So he has to confront that he let, Georgie die.
And I will say, before we move on, another problem I had with this movie is I feel like Pennywise could have killed them so many times.
I feel he wasn't strong enough yet.
But he rips Georgie's arm off, and this one, Bill's hand gets grabbed by a bunch of creepy hands.
Well, I feel like to me, that is Pennywise trying to feed off he's not strong enough yet.
Strong enough to kill the guy.
He was already beaten almost to a pulp. And that was, and the, he also captured
right.
a little girl.
I think that's a good theory, but I also think the movie didn't do a good job of explaining.
Yeah,
agree.
Because I'm just like, you could have killed Bev. You could have killed Bill. You could have taken these people out, and then they wouldn't have had what they needed to defeat it. Like, it was too many excuses for not.
Yeah.
For getting them all together, because we don't lose anyone until the very end.
Well, we lose Stan.
But they already took.
And you lose the skateboard kid.
Yeah,
but not any one of the group.
Yeah. You already have Stanley's totem that they got the very first one.
Did we lose the skateboard kid, or was that all part of the thing?
I'm assuming
they
we
made
lost
it like
him.
It really did. I thought he was messing with
you
him.
You didn't hear what happened to the skateboard kid. He grew up to be slamming on his guitar on MTV and married a girl that wrote a song about a girl he used to know.
So, that was one thing that bothered me, is I'm like, Pennywise had them at so many points. And I agree. We know from watching the original and from the first movie is it's like, we know that he feeds on fear, but they never address that.
Yeah.
And none of it felt really that scary. So I think there was a disconnect there on what he was trying to do, and they needed to present it in a different way, because to most people, it's just going to come off as he let them all escape.
Right.
Like, you had them all and you were being dumb. But yeah, I totally get that he was trying to scare him. I just feel like, he was strong enough to kill the little girl and the guy in the beginning, like Bill's hand was in there. I think if he can generate a bunch of hands to grab him, he can open his mouth and bite his arm off.
Unless he's weakened by the Losers Club because they beat him already.
Yeah, but he came back and killed those other two first. I mean, I don't know all the rules. I'm just saying it presents itself.
I don't think
itself.
They know their rules.
It presents itself the as
so,
are
yeah,
lots.
So yeah. Bill gets Georgie's boat. Mm. Richie gets a coin from the movie theater/arcade. Bev gets the letter that...
That was a hard scene to watch, too. Again, because it was real of him playing games with that guy, and then he's trying to impress Bowers. Like, I felt so bad for Richie.
Yeah,
like,
well, it's also a nod to that maybe Richie was gay.
Well, definitely. Yeah. And, but even though it wasn't alluding.
He was not hitting on that
kid. No, absolutely
that
not.
That was such like 80s trash of like, oh, you get, you know, like that was such a bully, like, oh, you want
to own my little cousin?
Yeah. It's so stupid, but I mean, believable in this context. I just mean, it's like you felt so bad for him because he did nothing to deserve that.
Right.
Other than be one of the Losers Club kids. Yeah. And yeah. But
so, yeah. So Bev gets the letter that actually, you know, Ben wrote that.
Yeah.
Bill
that she thinks is from Bill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bill. I'm trying to think. What did Mike get?
I think Mike
got something. Ben had the notebook, the yearbook page that he never got rid of.
Right.
At that point, Bev is like, maybe I'm supposed to hook up with you instead. All
now that you have washboard abs.
Yeah, exactly.
Jeez, how much did that guy work out?
I know. That was all CGI, too.
Yeah.
Speaking of that casting choice, I really like because he physically looks like a guy who used to be overweight as a kid and then you just really worked out and hit the gym a lot as like his body frame and his face and just like he really did look like that kid 27 years later and I can't say any of his acting really stood out to me except for that really the touching moment.
I liked him though.
Chastain,
I think the
he
look
did a good job, but he really looked the part. Like I was sold.
I liked him. I wasn't familiar with him. I looked up, he was on that show Beauty and the Beast, the television show. So I guess he was the main character in that, which is not like an adaptation of the cartoon, but I don't know what it was about, but it's called Beauty and the Beast. He was the main character in that, but I liked his look and I liked his, I don't know. I just think that he had for that character. I feel like he portrayed that, whether it was like looking longingly at Beverly.
Yeah.
You could tell he really cared about her and the things he was dealing with. So not that familiar with his work, but I'm like, yeah,
he was fine.
I thought all the casting was good. Really? Yeah. They may not have all been MVPs like Hader and Chastain, but I thought all the kids and the adult counterparts did a really good job.
Yeah, I agree. Chastain goes, this is the Miss Kirsch scene, which I thought was very well
done. So you've seen it in the trailer.
Yeah, you've seen the trailer.
I know. This is where I would have made a casting switch. I would have had Shea play the old lady.
Okay.
I would have had her play the old lady. Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I thought you were going to say you would have Amy Adams because I was going to...
That was a Lin Shea part. I'm like, I'm watching this in the trailer and then in the movie and it's like, oh my God, this is... this is Lin Shea. This is New Line. This is not rocket science. This is a Lin Shea moment. And I would have... whoever played the old lady, I mean, she was still really creepy. I just feel like, it's like, I just imagine Lin Shea playing that.
Yeah, I can see that.
But this got a lot of laughs when the lady stomps out. You know, I mean, that was just like ridiculous, uncomfortable laughs.
Yeah.
So that's the thing, is I had a lot of laughs that were brought on by Bill Hader and Eddie, but there were a lot of like uncomfortable laughing.
Most all of the, again, I'll put it in quotes, scary parts of this movie got laughs because everything was so ridiculous. Yeah. It became like funny where as opposed to the tension and the terror. I think there was a little too much of that, but
I think that Andy Muschietti, who did the part one,
the director of The Flash coming up,
hopefully not. I think it's either he worked with somebody on Starry Eyes, and I don't know if it's his wife or if it's a sibling, but I think that they worked together on the first one as well. And I wonder if she didn't work on this one. You know what I mean? Like, I wonder if there was just, maybe she wasn't there, so maybe she wasn't there to rein him in a little bit and tighten it. I don't know. There is something that was missing about from the second part.
Well, Cary Fukunawa. He's the one that developed the first one, right?
Yeah, now that dude's doing James Bond, so I think he's doing okay.
we'll see if he doesn't keep taking PlayStation breaks on set.
He'll be fine. So Bill gets his bike. This is where we get the Stephen King cameo. I do like where he's like, I'm going to sign it for you. He's like, nah, the ending sucked. And I was like, God, poor guy. Can't catch a break from anybody.
Even himself,
yeah. Mike gets, so they all show back up.
He can dry his tears with $100 bills.
Yeah, I think he's like, can I create my own $100 million bills?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We glossed over it, but that scene under the bleachers with that little girl, that was really creepy and terrifying. The whole...
Very similar to the Georgie scene in the
first
movie.
I'm sad. No one likes me because the way I look. And
I do like the kid where the kid's like, you're messed up looking. I'm out. And then, of course, he turns it around on her and eats her face.
Yeah, it's the heart, yeah.
So we get back, and they have to say, like, we have to... I think this is the other part where they're like, nope.
And this, I think this is where a different edit would have benefited this movie as well, because like it just, it also kind of gets bogged down in like artifact.
Sure, sure.
Like the phone calls. And I feel like if they could have interspersed other things, I think that's why some of the jump scares start to just feel tiresome, because you just get scene after scene after scene after scene of them, as opposed to there being some parceling out of that kind of stuff.
Right, for sure.
Meanwhile, Bowers is broken out of the mental
hospital.
Bowers
breaks out, and this is where, so they all kind of come back. Mike says, meet at the library at midnight. And I was like, sure, that makes sense. Do it during the day, you moron.
Right.
Never watch a horror movie. So they come back to the
library. Doesn't like him orchestrating his monster hunting business during the day.
But apparently he lives there.
But the library probably closes at like 6.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think anybody works at that library either. Just like nobody works at the hotel. Come to think of it, did you guys actually see anybody else?
That's what I'm saying. You only see him at the carnival.
In the hospital. Yeah. You're right. Like, I think they just filmed on like an empty location.
Which works,
or the Paul Bunyan scene.
Or the Paul Bunyan scene.
Where he turns into Midsommar.
I got to tell you, though,
that's a really good,
like when the color starts to drain out of that thing and everybody stops moving, like behind
and they're
him,
out of focus.
Yeah. They did in the first one. When you see that in the first one, if you go back and watch
the library scene,
there's that creepy librarian like in the background.
That's
with
good.
The, yeah.
I love that. And so but the Paul Bunyan thing is big in CG, but the people in the background and the stopping and looking and everything, that was really
moving in synchronization. Mm-hmm. They get back to the hotel. Bill Hader is just like, I'm out. Like, I'm leaving. So Ben has to kind of go talk to him and get him to stick around. Eddie shows back up covered in the puke, and he's wiping his face off. And as he's wiping his face off, all of a sudden he gets stabbed in the face with a knife, and he turns around. And just the way he's playing it, like there is a degree of like fear on his face.
Shock.
And we see Bowers.
Not Kenny Powers.
Right? Kenny Bowers. Where like he takes the knife out. And then as he like backtracks, he's trying to get back, and he falls into the tub and he stabs Bowers. And that's the line where he's like, God, I can't believe you still have that mullet.
It's funny.
I'm trying to think,
Bowers hightails it out the window.
Right.
He's gone.
Gets in the car with Hostetter, who's like the creepy zombie kid. Yeah. I forgot about the kid.
I like
from the
that
first
there's
movie.
Just a zombie driving around.
Yeah. Bill Hader takes off. Like Ben comes back downstairs. He's like, I think I got him to stay. And then of course we cut back and Bill Hader's like jumping out the back door, trying to get out of town. Bill shows back up and he kind of, the skateboard from the skateboard kid comes down the stairs and it flips over and he says, you couldn't save this one too. So Bill hauls ass back to the carnival. We see like this fairly really well done. Unfortunately, we just saw it in Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Of the Hall of Mirrors and playing tricks on Bill. And really what they're trying to, what Pennywise is trying to do is trying to get them to split up.
Yeah.
Like he's trying to separate them because he knows that together they can beat him together. But if they're all separate, then they can't. So I'm trying to think that.
So the little kid dies right in front of Bill and he.
Right,
freaks out.
And I like that. I like that scene. That's another one that, much like with the bleachers, I really like. It's not as creepy as the bleacher scene, but I like the direction of that because you did have that atmosphere of dread.
And the danger.
You did actually have real suspense being wound up because you didn't know what was going to happen. And so what the movie should have been doing the whole time. This is another one of those sequence of scenes that. It did work. Like this is what should have been carried out. I really liked it. And any time that there's like a scene in a Hall of Mirrors like that, I like it. And they're fun to watch. And I'm sure they're hell to shoot because
kidding.
All these mirrors around. And so it was fun. I liked it. And and just a little bit of Pennywise was great. I mean, the tongue was creepy. I mean, you got him like behind the kid. Like it was the
banging
the,
his head on the glass.
Yeah, stuff that. Was like, this is great because you're delivering, the kind of the experience that I want
that
to
you expected,
have
yes.
in this movie overall.
Yeah. And that's part of what makes this movie so frustrating ultimately is that there is a lot to like in this movie. Yeah. Like it's Yeah, it's just frustrating. There's
it
a,
is very I like
frustrating.
It despite the shortcomings.
Yeah.
I enjoyed this movie. You know, I mean, I would put it at like maybe a 7 out of 10, you know, somewhere in there if I decided to ballpark
fair.
It.
I think that's fair.
I really enjoyed it. It's not great. It's definitely not perfect, but I enjoyed the experience of going to watch it.
Yeah.
But these little things are frustrating. We're like, why couldn't they have just...
They were right there.
Yeah.
It was so close.
It was very close. Yeah.
So basically, I'm trying to think how they get... Anyway, they get back together is the bottom line. And they go...
They go down to the sewer.
They get back to the sewer.
And we see some flashbacks.
Oh, we should say that they go to the club. That's what it is. They go to the clubhouse
that
Ben had made, and they find the thing from Stan.
They found that first.
That's what set him off on their totem.
Yeah, right. But we should say that Stan's totem is there. Like, that's where they
are.
So they go back down to the sewer. They go back to like the main part where they see the deadlights.
Can we say the scariest part of this movie is thinking of how many diseases they're picking up in the
sewers? I
don't
even want to think about it. It's too gross.
Eddie was right. I am so freaked out by them in that dirty sewer water.
I do love that they reference the gray water.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, oh, great, gray water.
Right?
Perfect.
I just, the whole time, I'm like, ugh, it's giving me the skeevies.
And they go underwater. I was like,
it's just so gross.
That's gross.
It's like, that's not clear water. I hate to tell
it's
you.
It's gray water.
It's sewer water.
So that instead of where like the initial fight took place in the first
movie, whole hatch,
there's
goes...
a whole another part of it.
Yeah.
So they dropped.
I didn't see it somehow didn't come across as a hatch in the when they were down there before.
Well, because
all of a sudden it appears.
It does look like if you wouldn't because they never get up close to it in the first one. This time they're like climbing up on the hill or whatever it is, and they can see that it's like a the hole. So they climb down into the hole. And we realized this is where it kind of lost me. I was like, it's a stupid like rocket ship.
Well, and when it comes back to it, this is what frustrated me because the descent down, I'm like, they're going to climb quickly out of that.
Yeah.
Do you realize how hard it would be to get back out? Because when they go down, I'm like, there's no way they're getting out that way. They're going out a different way.
Right, right.
Nope. At the end, they just rush out of it before the place collapses.
They get
like,
out very easily.
Right.
So they burn their totems and they think they've got them.
Yeah, the lights go down into the thing like the ritual, but we didn't know. We saw a glimpse of it, but Mike had scratched out a side of it,
right?
Which apparently, I guess, someone survived to then inscribe the fourth side of the totem.
I guess,
which is they all died. Like, who told that story? But anyway,
some kid that was watching.
Yeah, so someone inscribed that, so he scratched it up.
It is like they are everybody's like. You lied again. Like, Mike lies a lot in this movie.
To get them all together.
To get them all together.
Which, you got to sympathize with Mike. Like, he knows he has to get them together. So, like, I mean, he does what he has to do.
Right. So, they all kind of, this is where now they all have to face their own fears. So, there was the scene in the first movie where Bill walks into the basement. And this is the scene where, like, you see Georgie off in the distance. And he, like, Pennywise comes up out of the water. They have a young Bill and older Bill have a confrontation, and Bill overcomes his fear.
I like this scene.
Yeah, Bev is...
I like it when he takes the air gun or whatever.
And misses or shoots him in the head.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bev, is, apparently they... there. I think Muchetti said that there was more blood in this than there was in The Shining. Like, there's more blood.
Wow.
Like, this whole scene... Like, this
a lot
scene,
of blood in that elevator
yeah,
scene.
Yeah, but they say... I think that, like, because this is so contained, like, there's more of it.
Yeah.
In this scene.
This was very red. Like, that blood looked very
that was goopy.
Real. And yes, they did a good job.
it was syrupy.
The physicality of that. But this is where you get the Here's Johnny.
Right.
She's like in a bathroom stall locked in there, and people
are
kind of
banging. Well, that's from the first movie, I think, is she's in the stall, and they dump, like, their lunches or trash on her.
But
I
this
think.
Time, blood's coming from the toilet.
Right.
And her dad's trying to beat down the door.
Yeah.
And
the, you
I
see Mrs.
Pennywise
Mrs. Kirsch is there.
Yes.
Yeah. And then
Ben is in the clubhouse
and he's covered in dirt
filling up like burying him alive.
Right. And then Richie and the other guy,
Eddie
do like the three doors. And I was like, this is a comedy,
right?
Like this is a tone shift where
this was very Abbott Costello meets
Frankenstein. It's very Shaun of the Dead.
Very scary. Yeah.
Where like they open the one door and it's just like, it's a Pomeranian. He's like, oh no,
I really liked when the Pomeranian. I mean, I enjoyed this humor of it.
I was fine with it, but it's just a weird shift in this scene.
Sure.
Especially this late into the film.
Yeah. Yeah.
I enjoyed it on its own, but I do get how
I got to tell you, I might even take these two actors in stuff together. I like they had good chemistry.
Yeah.
And I like the way they played off of each other. So like if they can maybe parlay that into not it chapter three, because obviously spoilers, we lose Eddie.
Yeah.
But like those two guys together, I thought were very funny.
I think it was Brad Hyen told me that in the first movie, in the closet, you see the top half of a body, and in this movie, you see a bottom half.
Okay,
run
that's
out.
Pretty good. That's pretty funny.
If they separated in the two movies, the top half and the bottom half.
So he's just like, no, he's messing with us. Let's try the very, very scary, and that's where you get the bottom half. And he's like, all right, what about the not scary at all? It's the Pomeranian.
And he says, next time we'll just go with a regular scary.
Well, I think he says that. He's like, there better not be a next time.
That's what he says. Yeah.
That joke works. Those are the quote serious horror film. Those are the funny moments that don't cause a total tonal shift. Those are those like brief moments of levity that are so important to an otherwise, very dark movie. And I wish we had had more of those little moments like that. We'll just stick with regular scary as opposed to some of the more laughable moments that are like, this feels like a tonal shift. Because it's important to have those, to be able to laugh, instead of being scared the whole time.
I think
we don't strike that balance.
There is an art to making a horror film that I think has been lost. Is that you can use comedy to break the tension.
Reset.
And exactly. Yeah. To do a reset to, like, you get them a big jump scare or you get them with some high tension, get them with a little bit of comedy.
You got to ease them.
If you look at Halloween, there's not a lot of comedy in Halloween, but it is it's ramping up. Like, it starts very chill and very light, and then it's like, oh god, like by the end of the movie your fate, whatever.
But the best horror movies are the ones that are able to get you to forget you're watching a horror movie, so that they can let you be at ease and be scared again. Because if you're expecting it,
right,
if you're expecting a jump, when you know jump scares are going to happen, they're not scary because you go, when you're jump scare,
when you're at 11 the entire time, you get worn out 45 minutes in.
Like a Michael Bolton song.
Exactly. Like a Michael Bolton song.
There's no build to a Michael Bolton
song.
He's
just going all.
He's got a great voice.
He's at 11.
You listen to his version of "When a Man Loves a Woman," and you listen to what Otis Redding's is. Yeah. That who sang it originally? Like, it's like the original's got a build to it,
right?
And by the end, man, that guy is just gut wrenched.
Right.
But he starts it gut wrenched, and there's nowhere to go.
No, then he's literally guts on the floor.
Yes.
Yeah. So all of our characters have the one thing. Then they decide we have to make them small. I guess that
Pennywise is a giant spider.
He's a giant spider, and Richie has been caught in the deadlights. Yes. And I thought the way they did his makeup was horrifying.
Yeah. Imagery of Richie in the air was fantastic. I'm like, please, more stuff like that.
Before he's in the air, though, I think the imagery of how
he
kind of collapses, but he's still standing.
But it's the headlights. And he gets
His legs, the way he does his legs. Like, my point is that. While the effects are cool, there's also a choice that the actor's making.
You think Bill Hader did that, where just like he kind of like slumped forward?
Yeah, I think. Yeah. And then they augmented it. Yeah. But I just like, it's easy to look at the effects, but there's a choice he made as an actor that makes that creepy.
When it freezes, but I mean like a deer in the headlights. I mean, he gets caught and it is very cool looking and very freaky because he goes from being normal, to the one you've seen to that. And you're just like, wow, because that's a moment of danger where you're like, oh my God, now he could be killed. Like, aside from if you know the story or whatever, but they can change stuff.
They change stuff.
Yeah, and so you feel like, oh my god, like what is going to happen here? He really has him.
Right. So then Eddie kind of has like a spear like from a fence, and Bev says it's a monster killer if you believe it. And they finally, Eddie overcomes his fear and he hurls this thing into the gullet
good
of Pennywise.
Imagery,
and knocks Pennywise back and knocks him backwards onto like a piece of his ship. Ugh. And then all of a sudden Eddie gets like a spider.
That's your moment of we did it, and you feel okay. You're relaxed. They beat Pennywise. He can't move off of this thing. And then it's that shot where he's real close up. Hey guys, we did it. Whatever.
Bam,
and
then like he gets back.
Yeah.
And I was like, I forgot that Eddie dies, and I was just like, man, you can't. Okay, he's paralyzed. Like his spine is gone from that whole thing, so he can't like make it out of here.
Yeah. He's not getting out.
No. So they finally decide we have to make him small. We have to make him believe. We have to make him believe that he's his actual form. So they all kind of just start, it's very, the bullied is rising up against the bully.
They're kind of using his own tactics.
They
against
are.
Too bad he didn't make those other monsters in the movie get small too. And then maybe they would have been much more fun to watch.
Maybe, but I feel like they didn't know, like that's kind of like the revelation in that moment while they're in there. So they didn't know that trick yet. So they make him small, and they talk him back into the ship, and they make him itty bitty, like goopy, yeah. And his face is all sunken in. And finally, Mike pulls a sex machine from Dusk Till Dawn, and like reaches in and grabs up. Oh no, it was not sex machine. It was Fred Williams, where he reaches into one of the vampire's chests and pulls the heart out. And like holds it there, and then Sex Machine takes like a pencil and just stabs the heart, and they're like, "Oh, there we go."
But they all grab.
But they all grab
the heart
and they squish it, and then it, you know, Pennywise crinkles away and dies. And then kind of they all come back to the bluffs. I guess is kind of where they are, and they jump in. Bev realizes that, oh, I don't love Bill at all. The character that we've been building to this relationship,
yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and jump ship to Abs McGillicuddy.
it happens, man. It happens.
Yeah. So yeah. So everybody kind of, and this is the scene I'm talking about with Bill Hader, where he's sitting there and you think he's okay, but he's not okay.
Yeah,
and he just breaks down, like his best friend and the guy that he loves. Whether they say it or not, that's what they're implying.
Definitely.
He's
dead. Heartbroken.
He's heartbroken.
Now,
yeah. So
he doesn't want to leave him when the place is imploding after right. Pennywise dies. He's there trying to stay with him, and they're like, "We gotta go."
Right.
And then they all hightail it somehow in a matter of
sure,
seconds
yeah,
up the flight. You know.
So they all kind of surround Richie and they give him a hug, and Richie makes a comment.
That,
how
I did not like. Is this the kissing scene underwater?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, that's not sexy. Trying to hold your breath and
yeah.
make out for that many
hey,
seconds.
Guillermo del Toro won an Oscar for a very
yeah.
similar
yeah.
scene.
Okay.
Yeah. Don't even get us started on
yeah.
that.
Ryan, did you listen to that episode?
I don't think you did.
Go back and listen to the yeah. Shape of Water episode and see what we thought of that.
Yeah.
But I did not. That is not sexy, because the whole time I'm thinking about, okay, so both of them have to be able to hold their breath for very long,
yeah.
and then they're making out while holding their breath, opening their mouth, like they're not inhaling any water.
Right.
I'm like, no, that's stupid. Stop giving me underwater makeout scenes.
Right, right,
that's
right.
Not, it's you like, try doing that and see how fun it is.
It's
you know?
Like sex in a bathtub.
Yeah.
It's not fun. It
like,
looks good on TV.
Yeah, it's great in the movie, but in real life, it sucks.
But
yeah.
that was dumb.
You're banging
Stop.
Your head on the nozzle.
And water is not a lubricant.
Nope. I had,
oh,
nope. It's not.
No.
yeah, so they all kind of go there. They decide to go. They're going their separate ways. Bill goes back to Hollywood, I guess.
And he can finally finish his story.
He finishes his story.
Is that book he's writing a chapter out of the real book, or did anyone catch? I felt like it. They show you the text of the book.
Yeah,
like,
I don't
like it
know.
Had to be
I don't
from,
know enough to know. I assumed it sure. was, but I don't know. That.
I'm just thinking it has to be a chapter out of it, because it's gonna talks about friendship or something.
Right,
but
yeah.
I did. Yeah,
it could have been from The Body, which
could have been
Stand by Me.
Okay.
Yes, yeah, which is a fantastic short story.
Yeah.
So yeah. So they. He gets a letter from Stanley, it turns out, and it's family. It breaks it down. And Stanley's like, I knew I didn't. I was not going to be strong enough to do this because I'm a pussy. but I knew that I could do something to bring you guys together. And he like the what they're saying,
which
is
weird,
like,
because he didn't. They all came to the town before they knew he was
well,
dead.
I don't think it was that to,
oh,
it
kept them there.
To
Got
keep
it.
Them together.
And it wasn't, yeah, and, well, and they needed to be a cohesive unit
right.
to win, and if he couldn't be a part of that,
Got
they
it.
Couldn't win.
Right.
So
okay.
If he was alive and not there, they wouldn't be strong
That
enough.
Makes more sense, because the whole time I'm thinking, like, okay, I was just in my head, like, what did he do?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't really,
right.
okay.
Right, right, we see Ben and Bev are together. Mike is hightailing it out of Derry.
He's finally going to Florida,
He's going to
I
Florida,
think.
Yeah.
yeah.
Richie,
which is where Dick Halloran went at the end of The Shining.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Ah. Yeah, they're all coming for HHN. I mean,
and then I'm trying to think. So Richie goes back to the bridge, and he etches in the E.
Yeah, we saw him as a kid doing R plus in a heart, and we didn't know. And then he's going over. We finally see it revealed. And I guess
he did, but we didn't see it. Yeah.
And then he was going back over.
Right.
And so you find out that he did have feelings for Eddie. And
that's kind of how it ends. So, yeah, it's a shame. Like, I really enjoyed it. I would agree. It's like a 7.5 for me.
Yeah.
It is very long. So just be prepared. I had to pee. Like, I peed during when Mike was getting his totem, and I was like,
I made it through the whole movie without
I know.
Peeing.
Well, I didn't
I
think
was
about
very proud
it.
Of
like,
myself.
I didn't.
I saw a 3.5 hour play with you, and I don't think you peed. Oh, you did
no,
one
we
time.
We saw each other in the bathroom.
Right. But for the first yeah, but that was after the second intermission, where I'm like, you made it two intermissions.
I did
without
make
peeing.
It two intermissions.
That's
without
what I was
peeing.
Impressed about.
Yes.
I'm like, how, what?
So, yeah, I think it's a good ending. There are some problems with it, but I think it's worth doing
yeah.
whatever it's going to be this weekend.
I was kind of at a six, but I could. probably be talked into a 7. So I'm right around in that neighborhood. Like, it's not, it's certainly not below a 6 because it's too good for that. But it's definitely not above a 7 because it doesn't do a lot of things right. And so that I think that's the neighborhood where I am, which is pretty consistent with the IMDb score, Rotten Tomatoes score, and the and Metacritic as well. Last time I checked, they were all 6 or 7, somewhere in that neighborhood. I mean, that's what it is to me as well.
I agree. It's flawed. There are a lot of individual elements to like, but it just doesn't pull together as a whole, which is, again, why I think I would love to see Topher Grace needs to step in.
And do his edit.
And do an edit. Because I think that there's enough good stuff here that you could assemble a really good four and a half hour
throw it on Netflix.
Movie and throw it on Netflix. Yeah. What doing. But I think that
if
you
could
substitute a lot of these flashbacks for scenes from the first movie and let those two things work.
Flow.
Yeah. In concert, I think that it would be it would benefit. Tremendously.
Sure.
So
there you go.
Well, I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can introduce themselves, or everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at Joey Butts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And Ryan, tell everybody where they can find you.
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at RLTerry1. I love to interact with you. I love, you know, making connections with all the people that I regularly interact with, and in hopes that one day we can take our friendship from the Twitter sphere into IRL and be able to continue our really engaging movie discussions. And so please follow me. I'll follow you back, and we'll have talking about movies. And I do a lot of talking about theme parks as well. So please follow me, and love to get to know you a little better. My blog is rlterryrealview.com. It's real with two E's. And and if you're ever in Tampa and you want to sit in on one of my screenwriting classes at the University of Tampa, you know, just hit me up, and I'd love to have you come in and sit on a class, and we can even talk more deeply about plot. But thank you guys so very much for having me on. Love listening to the show, and it's a sheer pleasure to get to sit down and talk with you guys about it. It's a big movie, and it was a big discussion, and we hit a lot of great parts that I think will help individuals decide if they want to watch it, or if they have watched it and they're not sure what they think. And we've given a lot of people different elements and components to think about, and it was very engaging, especially because it's so early in the morning, even an hour earlier for you guys. It definitely was a great way to start my Sunday fun day. So once again, thank you very much for having me on.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. And then you can find me on Twitter at Roger Kubert, or on Facebook at facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. And you can find the show online at facebook.com/Real Spoilers. And of course, Apple Podcasts, where you can go there, rate, review, subscribe, and on Patreon at patreon.com/Real Spoilers. So that's it for this one. Coming up next time, I don't know what makes sense. We've got
Goldfinch.
We've got Goldfinch or Hustlers.
Yep.
So
Goldfinch.
I vote for strippers, but Joe wants the Goldfinch. So
I heard Hustlers is supposed to be pretty good.
Speaking of strippers, I've got any of your listeners happen to be an app developer. I've got $1 million idea for an app. It's called Stripper, but it's spelled STRIPPR, so it's trendy, and it's set up just like Uber, but it's Uber for strippers. And so you, because I mean,
well, don't tell everybody.
Why need somebody to develop the app for me? Because I don't know how to do it. I got the idea. I just need somebody to develop the app. Because then you, like, if you want to strip your way through grad school, now you can do it more safely, and you can put on the app that you're available to strip from, like, say 6 to 11 at night after you've done your day job, and then it's GPS and it's very safe. There's no cash exchange. It's all done through a credit card. And then it's no longer a hassle to find that male or female stripper for your bachelor or bachelorette party, because you just put, this is where the party is at such and such a time. They come up, they show up, they do their thing, and they leave. So it's just like Uber, but for strippers.
All right.
Pretty brilliant.
Nah.
Yeah.
So, but so anyway, we don't know what we're going to do next time, but we'll figure it out. There will be a next time. So thanks for tuning in. And until next time, Binky gets a role on a kids show. Don't like these oddities. Most people would love to be shot at.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.